Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, my friends, to a very special edition of Web Sleuths Radio. And this is special, let me tell you. Okay, you all know the site BuzzFeed, right? Now, I don't know about you, but I could spend the rest of my life on BuzzFeed with stories like the most WFT animals in the world and goats behaving like chickens and how well do you know your teeth. That's just a small taste of what they have on BuzzFeed. But here's the thing. BuzzFeed is also really biting into the mainstream media, and mainstream media hates it, and I love it. You can go on there and find some great stories about Donald Trump, the latest in court cases. So they mix everything that we want to read and see on one website, and like I said, they've pissed everybody off, but they are just going like gangbusters. And in addition to BuzzFeed.com, they also have a YouTube show. And this YouTube show, amazing. It's called BuzzFeed Unsolved Supernatural and BuzzFeed Unsolved True Crime on YouTube. And I am so delighted because I am a drooling groupie with these two guys. Ryan Bigara and Shane Madej, welcome to Web Sleuths
Radio. Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Now, let me tell a little bit about your show in case there's one person out there who hasn't seen it. It's very irreverent. It's not your typical, oh, let's go investigate this and chit-chat. I mean, it just reminds me of my son and his buddies if they went out and tried to do something. You know, but it's great. But what I love about it is, Ryan, you believe. Let's talk about the supernatural first for a little bit. You do two sets here, two different programs, one on supernatural and one on unsolved true crime. And, Ryan, you believe. I mean, you even, and
oh,
one
yeah,
of your
absolutely.
Shows. Oh, I love it. And one of your shows, you didn't bring your holy water. What was that? That was the where you went to the bar and you were all upset
because
you didn't bring your holy water.
Yeah, there's actually a portal to hell in Kentucky.
The
Kentucky honky tonk bar, by day at least, or in at least until the early night. And by late night, there's actually a basement that houses a portal to hell, reportedly. I believe that, of course. My co-host does not believe that, but I was a little skeptical going into an area like that without any kind of protection. So yeah, I didn't bring my holy water because.
And I think it was you that said in that. That's what I heard. You went to all kinds of different churches, and you couldn't grab that teaspoon of holy water.
He knocked on every church door in all of Cincinnati, tried to get himself some holy water to no avail.
Yeah, I went to eight different churches.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've got some holy water from Lourdes that I've had since I was a child. I'll send it to you, Ryan, so you'll always have it, okay? It's very strong,
sounds
very
good to
powerful.
Me.
Hey, and that's where you also said, and this cracked me up, you came up with the term holy balls, dude, and now I've passed that along to my son, and that's all they say now. Actually, that was in the spirit of the Whaley House where you said that. Holy balls, dude. It sounded like a Batman, you know, saying, if you will. But let's talk about
YouTube.
Because there you go, Adam West. That sounds like something Robin might say to Adam West. Let's talk about how you both got started on this, because let's face it, BuzzFeed is like, it isn't like any other website on the internet. And mainstream media, they're all, you know, upset because of BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed is really, really taking a bite out of what they do, and I'm glad. I mean, it's a great site. And so this kind of offshoot, this YouTube channel that you have, how in the world did your life paths take you to this one place? And, Ryan, let's start with you. Ryan is the believer, by the way, the believer in the supernatural.
It basically started kind of similar to what you were saying before, where it kind of captures the feeling of a group of friends talking about something rather than people who proclaim themselves as experts, because we by far are not experts on the occult or any of these cold cases. We're just people who are interested in them. And it was kind of just something where I thought there should be a show where people kind of discuss these kinds of things as you would with friends. And you could kind of capture the feeling of hanging out instead of being lectured or watching a documentary, so to speak. So that's kind of how the show got started and how I got interested in it. I was always interested in all this stuff. In terms of the supernatural, I actually used to be a skeptic until I saw some things that made me a believer. much to Shane's chagrin. He's already grinning at me right now.
Shane, before we get to you, just one moment, just bear with us here. Ryan, what did you see that changed your mind?
I was on the Queen Mary, and there were several occurrences that night that made me kind of question my my belief that the ghosts weren't real. I wavered in that as the night went on. Like, things would grab my leg. I heard voices. When I was sleeping in my room, the faucet turned on by itself. And then I think the final straw was the next morning when I was brushing my teeth. My toothpaste that was sitting on this little shelf in the bathroom lifted off the shelf in a way and fell to the ground. And I got it in the corner of a camera that I had set up in the bathroom. And that, seeing the footage, but also seeing it in person, that was it for me. And that's when
I accepted this
real thing.
And that was very compelling footage. Rarely do you get footage like that. And so you can go on YouTube and just Google Busby's Unsolved Supernatural and put in Queen Mary, and you'll be able to find that particular episode. Let's go with Shane Madej. And Shane, you are the skeptic. But first, before we talk about your skepticism, tell us how you got to BuzzFeed and YouTube and the Unsolved series.
Well, I wasn't in Unsolved from the beginning. It was initially Ryan with his friend Brent, who is equally dubious when it comes to all these supernatural cases. Brent and I both have large, annoying brains that don't stop thinking. So eventually, when I was brought into the fold, I think Ryan just wanted someone. Maybe Ryan just is a glutton for punishment and wants to challenge his own beliefs because, I don't know, he asked me if I wanted to join, and I happily obliged because we're pretty friendly in real life. And, it's exhausting, sure, to hear someone talk about ghosts that much, but, we have a good time.
Exhausting, that's a good word I'd use to describe it.
Exhausting. There you go. Well, let's talk about this for a moment. Let's see if we can kind of straighten all this out. These things happened to Ryan. He's actually got video of the one where his toothpaste lifted up and fell on the floor. I've seen it myself. He says he feels things grabbing his legs. Shane, in all the times and all the shows that you've done, have you not felt anything like Ryan? Have you not experienced anything like Ryan has experienced?
Let me give you a pretty big scoop here, Tricia. I have not.
Oh, come on.
You watched that toothpaste video and you found it compelling because, boy, oh boy, I find that to be the least exciting video I've ever seen.
But the toothpaste, there was nothing that propelled that toothpaste off of the shelf. It just propelled itself. And
I was just saying, as two people with eyes that work, I agree. I think nothing moved it off. But, I think Shane's one of those people that will just find a way to dance around anything that he can, just because I think he's holding a little too steadfast to his beliefs, and maybe one day something will happen to him where he truly believes, but that day has yet to come.
Well,
Shane,
we don't all have
you.
To gang up on me here. Yes, Tricia.
No. We love you. We love you, Shane.
What
would it take for you to finally believe? What would you have to see or feel?
I would like to see something that cannot be written off very easily as something else. We were recently in New Orleans in the Dauphine Hotel, which is allegedly very haunted. And we were staying in a hotel room, and Ryan remained awake all night because he heard footsteps upstairs. And this is a hotel where people are staying, so footsteps wouldn't be that out of the ordinary.
That's not fair.
And in fact, there was someone staying upstairs, but when Ryan knocked on the door, the guy was like, oh, yeah, I heard that too. But so for me, whereas some people might say, well, that's obviously a ghost, my brain is going to go to the logical thing here and say, well, it was probably someone walking around upstairs. That's just me,
But there is a fair amount of spin. And when you evaluate it through that prism, which you just said that there's people staying at the hotel, which was accurate, there was, but we were staying in a building separate from the hotel, a little smaller building, a two-story building with only four rooms. of which two were occupied, us and this other guy upstairs. And he said that he was spooked by the footsteps as well. He didn't know where they were coming from. So I think there's a way to spin that either way. I don't know why he would lie to us, Shane. Why would he lie to us?
You know what? You know what? Agree to disagree.
Okay, sure. Fine.
You get us on these little tangents, and we'll go for hours.
I'm sorry, yeah.
I think Bessie might
be
chomping at the bit.
Can I interject real quick?
Please.
Yeah. I'm from New Orleans, and the French Quarter is full of It's full of ghosts.
I agree.
We're all
very
believe.
Proud of our ghosts.
Exactly. New Orleans is just...
At night.
Yeah.
Everything's
like the
haunted.
Axeman. Like the Axeman from New Orleans. Now, that was a true crime / ghost story, wasn't it? Well, let's talk a little bit about how you decide, because you do have true crime and then you do have supernatural, and sometimes the two shall collide. You did a great one on Elisa Lam, the woman in the hotel with the elevator, and then she was found, her body was found floating in the water well on top of the hotel. You did the Axeman of New Orleans. Let's talk about, and I'm not sure who to address this to, so speak up and just give us your first name so we know who we're talking to. How do you get started on a topic? What takes you there, and how does it get written? Just kind of give us the rundown.
So for most of these, to kind of preserve the dynamic of the show, I usually do all the research, and this is Ryan, by the way. I do all the research. I have a team that helps me with the research because the research that I conduct tends to be a little bit more lax, for lack of a better term, whereas theirs is more, I guess, by the book. So we kind of meet in the middle of what we could actually say and what's factual. So all the stuff we say in the show is factual. And I'll write my scripts from that research, and then after I write the scripts, I'll tell the stories to Shane, almost like you would tell a story at a campfire. And then we kind of just, you know, riff on the story. And sometimes I'll take turns when it comes to more conspiracy-based theories, and he'll tell me I'm a fool. So that's kind of like the dynamic of the show and the process every time.
Now, it's interesting. Let's take The Boy in the Box. That is a big story that's still on Web Sleuths. It's everywhere. There was this young man. They believe he's about 5 years old. His body was found in a box in the 50s. Was it 1955? I apologize. I don't remember the year. And nobody has identified this young man yet. And they have a perfect picture of him. He's somebody's child. He had a nice haircut. And you two took that story, and this is what I liked about it, and you just discussed it. It's you at a table, both of you at a table, and then you're showing pictures. Tell us about that particular story. Did you end up feeling anything differently, or is it just as frustrating to you as it is to everybody else?
Oh, it's absolutely just as frustrating. Like, I think that's kind of just the interest when it comes to these cold cases is, at least for me, and I hope this is, I'm going to imagine that this is kind of composite on the rest of the world, but you kind of just want to see justice served so bad that sometimes you will fill in a little bit of the plot holes that don't really add up when it comes to theories. But in this case, like, it was just another one of those cases that was just wildly frustrating because there was a couple promising leads, and they ultimately led nowhere. Like, for instance, the box, they were able to trace it back to which store it came from. They were able to trace it back to how many potential buyers there were of that particular box that housed the bats and nests that were housed by those boxes. But in the end, I mean, it's still unsolved. They don't know who he is. And then it's just kind of open-ended, and that's upsetting.
It is. It's very, very frustrating. And today on Web Sleuths Radio, we're talking with the hosts of Unsolved True Crime, BuzzFeed's Unsolved True Crime and Unsolved Supernatural, Ryan Begara and Shane Madej. And Shane, let's go to you. Were you ever interested in true crime, or was this kind of a new thing to you?
I've always been interested. It's not something that I haven't read a lot of true crime books, but I am very guilty of always falling down sort of Wikipedia rabbit holes. And I've always loved true crime movies. Zodiac is one of my favorite movies. I've always had sort of a morbid fascination. I know where to cut it off. You know, I don't want to let my mind become poisoned by it all, but you know, I don't have posters of John Wayne Gacy in my room. Yeah, I'm sure.
You're not a grueling groupie like I am to you guys. I get
no,
that.
But yeah, I've always been kind of fascinated with the fact that there's spooky specters in the world of people who are murdering people. It's a bummer, but I'm an optimist, so hopefully I'll remain undead and not get murdered at some point.
I hope so. Let's keep that hope. Ryan, what were you going to say?
Oh, yeah, the world.
I can hear you.
I mean, that's just kind of what it all comes down to. And
I can hear you chuckling in the background.
Oh, yeah, I'm just laughing at Shane's silly face. Sorry.
And you can go on YouTube and see their faces. They're both cute guys, trust me. They're very, very cute.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. That's very kind of you.
You're welcome. And it's very sexist and all of that, but I don't care. I think you're both very sexy and handsome. But I got to warn you, I'm an old bat that, you know, my eyes aren't what they used to be. So just be prepared. Okay, I want to talk about Alisa Lamb. Now, this story creeps me out. And, Ryan, I'm sure it totally creeps you out. Shane?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it? I want to make sure Shane is creeped out just with the rest of us, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sufficiently creeped out by unsolved mysteries. This one especially, if you just look at the video footage, there's something inherently unsettling about just watching it. I think Ryan at one point had mentioned when you watch footage like that and there's no audio from it, it almost makes it even creepier just because of how dead quiet it is. And
yeah, it kind of loses the quality of life in it. You just realize you're watching something that's just truly unsettling. It sets the stage perfectly for you to be creeped out.
Ryan, describe that video for us, if you will, of Alisa Lamb in the elevator.
Yes, just the premise of the actual case or the process of filming it?
Well, how about both? Let's do the premise and then how you filmed it.
Yeah, so basically the story is a young woman checked into a hotel in 2013 in downtown Los Angeles, and she was acting a little erratically. Her roommates had complained to the hotel manager that she'd been acting strange, so they moved her to a private room. And then from there, what we see is elevator footage, which is the last footage ever taken of this woman, where she is behaving very strangely. It appears she's even talking to somebody. She's moving kind of her hands in an almost supernatural way. And then the next thing we hear of her, she's found on the roof of the hotel in a water tank, seemingly with no way to get up there, which makes this case even creepier because if you look at the elevator footage, it's apparent that she wasn't in much control of her own body, or she was under the influence of something, or maybe even scared, which makes you wonder how she was able to achieve getting onto the roof, which had a lot of bells and whistles to do that. And it's a very unsettling case. And to film it, we basically went to the hotel. We went to the elevator. And this was before we had started our paranormal investigations. I wish I'd had the opportunity to investigate there, but we just walked around. And even walking around, I know Shane always rolls his eyes at this point, but you can kind of just feel that something is weird in the air. Like you just feel something feels off. And especially sitting in that elevator, it's very unsettling. It's even more unsettling that that's an operating hotel and people just don't know the history. They've actually rebranded to be a completely different hotel, and people are just unwittingly going into a death elevator, so to speak. So
welcome to
it's
the
very
elevator.
Strange. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Alisa Lamb, when she got on the roof and got in the water tank, wasn't that water tank lid? I mean, wasn't it impossible to open, let alone close, while she was in it? I mean, isn't it virtually impossible for her to have done something like that?
To get to the roof, she had to climb up a fire escape, and then she also had to go through a locked rooftop door, but that door would set an alarm if it was opened, and there was no alarm heard that day, so there's red flag number one. How did that even happen? And then secondly, if she even managed to get up to the roof, she had to get to the tank platform, which was up a 10-foot ladder. The lid was 20 pounds. She had to get into the tank, then close the lid after she got in somehow. And she also was naked when this happened. So I don't know, like maybe she took the clothes off before or after. The whole scenario is fishy to me. I don't quite know how all that was achieved by someone who clearly looked out of it. And that's actually
Shane,
like the official.
The official what?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say the official, I guess, ruling was that her bipolar disorder contributed to her behavior, and that's why her behavior was erratic. But there was also nothing in her toxicology report that suggested that there would be any kind of foreign substances that would, you know, contribute to her behavior. And if the argument was that it was something like bipolar disorder, how would she, how would she be able to do all that stuff? I don't know. I mean, I'm just going off what I saw in the footage, and the footage looks like she was, under the influence of something. So, I don't know. It's fishy to me.
Right.
She definitely did in the elevator. And not to mention, she was, she wasn't a large young woman to be able to do all that climbing and opening that lid. I mean, she was, rather petite. So,
no, absolutely, yeah.
Wonder. Yeah. That was quite a feat for her to be able to maneuver all of that on her own.
What's the use, Shane?
And let...
So,
right.
Here's the thing.
Oh, go ahead.
I realize that I'm sort of an antagonist to Ryan in the supernatural season because I don't believe in ghosts. And what I'm learning here with true crime or these other unexplained mysteries is that I'm probably infuriating in the sense that a lot of things, I'm content with them being a mystery. Like, a lot of things I think, we'll just never know. And that it really is not the spirit of what your entire website is about, but how I feel.
It would drive everybody insane on Web Sleuths if I just said, hey, I guess we'll never know. Let's just close this discussion. I would be killed, literally, just torn apart by wild animals. Now, the weird thing, let's not forget the ew factor in this case is the drinking water was smelling and tasting funny. And so they kept complaining, and that's when they found the body. That just creeps me out. I don't think I'd ever be able to drink water again. It's absolutely
disgusting.
But also
means for a couple of days that guests were unknowingly drinking body water. I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah, cadaver water.
Gross.
Like people stew, people chili.
People Soylent from the movie Soylent Green, if you remember that.
Oh, Soylent Green. There you go. Soylent Green. Oh, one of my favorites. Let's talk a little bit about the Sodder children. Now, real briefly, there was a huge house fire. Was it 4 or 5 children that they couldn't find after the fire? I believe it was four.
Five. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I looked at that case. I have to recheck my...
More than a couple, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but now let me tell you something. There was a woman, and I apologize, I should have looked this up, but there was a woman not that long ago, maybe 20 years ago or so, her house caught on fire. She had a baby in a crib, and they told her the baby, they couldn't find any trace of the baby, and the baby just burned up. She didn't believe it for 1 second. And lo and behold, guess what? I think it was her neighbor had stolen the baby and started the fire. And they, fortunately, mother and daughter found each other. Of course, the daughter was quite a bit older. But so it can happen. People who look at the Sodder children and say, well, for the parents to say, that 5 kids were kidnapped out of this fire, it can happen. And when you look at the bizarre things leading up to it, that's what I love about your YouTube shows is because the Unsolved True Crime from BuzzFeed, you don't take hours and hours to get to the point. You give us the information pretty quickly, and you take it apart pretty quickly, and if possible, you do it in sometimes a very humorous way, and there's nothing humorous about the topic. But let's face it, sometimes you got to throw humor in there or you'll lose your mind. So the Sodder children, if you don't mind, I would like you to take us through that. How did you come upon that case? What drew you to it, and what were your final conclusions? And Ryan, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Shane.
Yeah, I'd always been interested in true crime, and that was always one of the cases that I'd read that really sat wrong with me. It just didn't seem like it's always weird to me when there's a lot of officials saying that a thing happened a certain way when all the facts and circumstance seem to point to something else. And this is one of those cases where it seems almost clear that they didn't die in the fire. And I actually looked at the forums of Web Sleuths a lot for this, too. And yeah, it's always interested me. And I mean, where I land, I ultimately land that, yeah, I don't think they died in the fire. I think that they were taken out. The fire was a diversion. And wherever that trail of, you know, gumdrops leads, I guess I don't really know, but I do think that they were, you know, abducted from the house.
Why?
Just because, well, I mean, there was no evidence that there was no bone, first off, and the fire, I believe, I may be wrong here, but there should have been bones for how long the fire was burning and the temperature was burning at. There was also a weird circumstance with George where he allegedly had a man threaten him and his family saying that he was going to, I believe the quote was, your house is going to go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed. If that is true, I mean, that's a pretty big admission of guilt right there. And there was also a weird circumstance when it comes to like spotting the children at later points. And I don't know. I guess when you lay it out, it is all circumstantial. But the reaction of the parents mixed with all that circumstance makes me believe that maybe things aren't what they seem here.
Shane, give us your thoughts. You had some interesting points in your YouTube video.
This was a delight just because normally I don't buy into a lot of the conspiracies around stuff, but there are so many different factors surrounding this case that are off. Everybody working in the town seems sort of corrupt and seem to have ulterior motives. There's the crazy thing with, what was it, like the Italian mob or something.
There was also the fire department that took, what, like 2 hours to go 3 or 4 miles? That was ridiculous.
And the guy who said he found a heart in the ground.
Oh, and it turned out to be a piece of liver
or something.
It was a piece of chopped
roast
liver.
Roast beef or something. Yeah. Very strange.
They also used these townspeople we're talking about to form the jury, which seems like definite conflict of interest to me. But there was the thing where Sylvia claims to see that the lights were on when the fire started, and if it was in fact faulty wiring that started the fire, the lights would be off. So, I mean,
right.
I guess you are relying on testimony here, but there are certain things like the liver and then the fire department being incredibly late somehow.
And famed detective C.C. Tinsley, who looked into the case and then disappeared, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
A detective going missing.
He just went, did he go missing like his family didn't know where he was, or he just vanished to go off the grid? Do we know?
No one really knows. They hired a detective to go look for whatever had happened, and then they never heard from him again.
Old cold case Tinsley.
So, there's your cold case right there.
Cold case Tinsley. There it is.
That's it.
And going back to the bones, too, there should be bones left at a site that didn't burn for a certain amount of time. You have bodies need to be burned at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit for about 2 hours, and the solder home burned for like 45 minutes. So,
right.
And there was no bones.
No way that happened.
So,
well,
I mean,
go ahead.
Sorry, you can go. Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's very strange. It doesn't really add up.
And wasn't there some arguing about Mussolini? He wasn't a big Mussolini fan, the father, and somebody got mad at him for that. I'm just trying to figure out why in the world you would kidnap 5 of their children. I believe that they were kidnapped, too, just for the physical evidence. Like you said, there should have been bones there. There wasn't. And just like in the case of the mother who the fire department said, yeah, your baby burned up in the fire and there were no bones. And she said, no, she didn't. She's still alive. It's the same thing. You would think, though, the Sauter kids would have come forward by now. They were
old enough. That's the
weirdest
thing about it, yeah. Like, you would think if, like, you were kidnapped from a house fire when you were a little kid, you would at some point come forward. I don't really see the benefit of hiding out unless they're under some kind of danger, maybe. But that's always been a thing that kind of gives me pause to the idea that maybe it wasn't an abduction and it actually happened as they said it did. But I don't know.
I feel like kids don't always remember those things, though. Like, I might have had a different family until age 5, and I probably wouldn't have remembered.
They were, like, some of them were teenagers. What are you talking
about? Oh, okay. All right.
Well, teenagers, they can have lapses of memory, too. I mean, you know.
Sure.
Hey, anything's possible.
I would think a house fire would be one of the bullet points you'd remember.
I think so, too. In fact, we discussed this case on Web Sleuths. You can go to websleuths.com, and we have our members have been discussing it for years and years. And if anybody can crack it, it'd be the people at Web Sleuths, but nobody has done it yet. So let's talk a little bit about the show scheduling and how that works. Are you on the typical regular TV schedule where you do 10 episodes or 17 episodes? When do you get new episodes? When can we expect them?
So we kind of are now on that TV schedule where we'll shoot a season and then we'll go into editing. And then while that's happening, usually a season that we had just shot before that or months prior to that will start to air and they'll roll out one a week. Right now we're at the start of the true crime season. Episode 2 just came out last Friday, and the new one will be the third one will come out this Friday. Right now we're shooting our next season of Supernatural, and and that's kind of how it works. We kind of are always in constant rotation of which show we're shooting between the two.
I've got to ask about the Supernatural, because I want to, if you could just tell me a little bit about the story, because I want to hear what Shane thinks about it. What's your first story in the new season? Can you say?
I don't know if I can, but it's definitely, I'll say that it's the most interesting historically of all the places that we've gone to, in my opinion. Would you say that, Shane, or no?
Yeah, it's definitely, we've been to a lot of places. I really enjoy the history aspect of a lot of the places, like when we went to the Winchester Mansion, that was very neat. New Orleans obviously had a ton of interesting history behind it, but this place also, when you walk around it, it was very, you could feel the past very prominently.
Yeah, it also is a skeleton of that past, too. And actually, I'm going to recant what I said before. I think it's probably the second most interesting place historically, because I would say Salem was probably the most interesting, just because that's so deep rooted into all of our conscience. So,
right. Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we can expect a new season coming up of the Supernatural, and the true crime is, what was the true crime case that just came out on Friday?
That was Boy in the Box.
Oh, it was a Boy in the Box. Okay, I did listen to that. Okay, I want to talk about the Winchester House for just a moment, please, because that is, correct me if I'm wrong, that is the one where Mrs. Winchester kept building rooms because of something about the spirits of the people who had been killed by the guns her husband made. Is that that's the same house, right? Okay.
That's the same house.
Okay, so you went there for Supernatural. Shane, anything? Did you get anything from the Winchester House?
You know, it's a very whimsical house.
Yeah,
it looks kind of like Disneyland. It's got a very fun vibe to it. And actually, one of the things we learned there, which was kind of fascinating, is that Walt Disney and the Imagineers actually visited that place and used sort of it as inspiration when they were building the Haunted Mansion. So it makes sense that it has this very spooky, fun vibe to it. No, I didn't feel anything there. It was pretty interesting. It was like, I love the visual marvel of it. It was neat. Like, we had someone who sort of showed us the lay of the house, but I think if we had been let loose in the house and just, we probably would have gotten lost, and we'd still be there to this day.
Yeah, probably. You took the longest path possible to say, no, I didn't feel anything.
No, I felt nothing. I felt nothing at all.
And so what happened to you, Ryan, at the Winchester House?
I got to say, of all the places, I will say that was the one I was maybe the least scared at, but that's also just because he's right. It truly was whimsical. It was a maze. It was almost kind of like a fun house. Rebuilt as an actual house.
You were pretty scared. You were pretty scared in the basement, though.
I was pretty scared in the basement. I mean that's fair, though, right? I would say. But in terms of the fun aspects, yeah, there were like cool things. There was like a gift shop. There was like a penny squish machine, a penny squeeze machine. So there were definitely things to help me take my mind off of it. And just like looking at the weird architecture in itself, was distracting enough to, like, keep me calm.
Ryan also tends to be less afraid of just standard boilerplate ghosts than demons. Because if he gets in a place that allegedly is possessed by a demon or has a demon entity, his eyes roll back into his head and he starts shaking.
It's true. I mean, well, demons are out to hurt you. Demons could actually ruin your life. Whereas ghosts could do creepy little specter things like lift up a tube of toothpaste, but that's kind of the extent of it. I'm still scared of them, but demons by far take the cake for me.
Let's talk about, and I have to be honest here, I'm kind of with Shane on this one. I'm not a big demon believer. I believe the demons are alive and they're humans. Those are the demons in my life, the humans that hurt.
Yeah.
So give us a feel of demons and why you believe in them, Ryan.
I mean, I think it also has to do with the fact that I was brought up in a somewhat religious background. I went to catechism. I started Catholic, then I went to Christian school. And that's kind of ingrained in that upbringing. Like, there, as much as there is light, there is dark, Satan and all that stuff and his minions, so to speak. But I guess that makes that groundwork made me believe that there's the possibility for these entities to exist. And also when you look at things like exorcisms and pastors who are actually certified to give these exorcisms, it's a practice that's taken very seriously. One of the guys we talked to before Winchester was a guy who actually traveled to Rome to go train with the Vatican. And he became one of the few certified exorcists in the world. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who do take it very seriously, and I'm definitely in that crowd.
So when you were at Bobby McGee's?
Mackey's, Bobby
where
Mackey's.
The portal to hell, Bobby Mackey's, sorry, where the portal to hell was. What makes you think there was a portal to hell there?
I mean, like, that's basically just the claims of the ownership, the history of the place. There's been reports by people who've investigated that basement that have detailed being attacked and having an entity follow them home. There are descriptions of sounds and things that are usually attributed to demonic presence. And I mean, like, when we go into any of these places, we're by no means ghostbusters or anything. We're not here to clear the location and say whether it is or is not haunted or whether or not it's infested with a demon. We're just going to experience what is claimed to be, and whether or not we make that determination isn't really the shtick of the show. It's more just the experience.
Right.
That being said, I don't know if I can say whether or not I think there is a demon there. I mean, I definitely felt something sinister there, but I couldn't definitively say yes or no. I'd have to spend more time there. Nothing too crazy happened. We had our experiment with the flashlight, but I would say if I had to make a bet, like if I had to put all my money on yes or no for a place that's infested with a demon, I would put all my money for yes for this place we went to called the Sally House.
Wow.
That place.
The Sally House?
Was truly the worst.
let's talk about that. What was that called again? What was the name of the house?
It's called the Sally House. It's in Atchison, Kansas. It was actually on an early TV show. It was on TV called Sightings. I don't know which network it was on, but that show is pretty widely considered one of the 10 most haunted places in the world. And that place, we had a light turn on and off on command for a period of like 4 to 5 minutes where I almost lost my mind. I mean, Shane will attest to this. I looked like I was going to pass out just because I couldn't believe what was happening.
Shane, let me ask you, if this is going on while there's a light going on and off, didn't that give you pause that, hey, maybe this is real?
If you watch the video, you can tell it actually does not give me any pause because I'm laughing hysterically. I had known about it's sort of this trick that ghost hunters do with a mini mag light. And
time
I talk about this, Ryan rolls his eyes, but they sort of have a very, you know, because you twist those on and it's a very, you know, just the slightest touch can turn it on or off.
Right.
So I wasn't all that moved by it because you know, we had asked it already a couple times, like, oh, if there's a demon here, turn the light on, and nothing happened. And eventually it did turn on. I don't know. demons don't, I just don't believe in them. Ryan came home from that trip and he had trouble sleeping for like 2 weeks and he would wake up screaming.
Wow.
I slept like a baby.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, like it did take a while for it to turn on, but mm-hmm. it really only turned on once Shane really started to antagonize it. And for the most part, the person conducting the questions, the actual questioning towards the light, was a guy that came along with us. He was a local paranormal investigator named Eric Ensbrenner. And once Shane started to take the wheel, that's when the light really started to respond. And Shane attests that to coincidence. I attest that to just now there is a presence of something in the room. And I felt like I felt it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And whether or not he will admit it, there was a moment where he started to, his fabric of reality was off guard, started to shatter. He's giving me very skeptical looks.
That is not actually true.
No, it's 100% true. You weren't sure.
I was laughing.
Here's the quote in the video. You said, I don't really know how to explain that. Sometimes flashlights are strange, which is...
That's how I explained it.
No. but it was a very strange occurrence. Yeah, I recommend watching that scene. And just that it's in the same episode as Winchester, so we did like a mega episode where we went to three different places. All that kind of escalated in terms of horrifying and grossness.
Exactly.
And Sally House was the grand finale of this 45-minute episode. And, yeah, I recommend watching that part because it's crazy.
It's hilarious.
Definitely. Well, gentlemen, we're about to wrap things up here. Is anything you would like to tell us that we can expect in your closing statements here on Web Sleuth Radio? We'll start with Shane. Shane, here's your platform. Say whatever you want.
My platform. just be assertive. If you have a ghost in your house, be assertive. Be antagonistic. If you're very concerned, bust out some sage. Just live your best life. If you're not afraid of ghosts, they generally don't bother you because they're not real. So that's how it works. To all the sleuths out there, even though I am not particularly concerned with the outcome of cases, I applaud your work. I know Ryan is a big fan of it. So keep at it.
Well, thank you. Shane, let me ask you, I definitely want to have you on again. Two questions. First of all, were you brought up, how Ryan talked about he went to a Christian school, he was raised Catholic. Were you brought up in any way to be more cynical? And do people in your family or your friends give you any sort of grief about the stance that you take during these shows?
So I was brought up, I wasn't brought up quote-unquote cynical. I think both of my parents are fairly sarcastic. They did send me to church for a while when I was younger, but after a while... I think they just stopped making me go, and they stopped going as well. So we all just, I think they thought it was correct to send us to church.
You learn a lot of good, like right and wrong at church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got all that out of Aesop's Fables too. And then after a while, so I just stopped going. So I've never had a very strong belief in the spiritual, but I do have an aunt who is very spiritual, and usually she'll see the latest episode and text me about how foolish I've been and how I'm.
You mean she wasn't pleased when you laid on top of a pentagram and asked a demon to eat your soul?
No, she was not.
Well, I can't imagine.
Why
would she be upset with that? Interesting.
And nothing happened when you did that, right?
No.
Actually, the light turned on and off on command when he did that. That was kind of the last straw for me, and then we had to sleep above that basement all night, so... That was fun.
Oh, my gosh.
And a demon did, in fact, eat my soul. So ever since then, I've just been sort of hollow.
Yeah, you will always
and that's why you sound. That's why you sound a little hollow on the phone, then. Your soul has been chewed out of you. Oh, my goodness.
Correct.
Ryan, here is your final platform. What would you like to say to Web Sleuth Radio listeners?
Yeah, to counter what Shane was saying, I would say that when you're communicating with ghosts, you're opening a door to something that you don't really know, and it's actually a dangerous activity, so unless you're prepared for the consequences, I would not recommend doing so, and especially when that comes to demonic entities. So It's definitely not a safe practice, so do not do what Jane was saying, unless you have some kind of death wish, or you are a self-proclaimed nihilist, as Shane has said he is. So I wouldn't recommend it. And to all the people who are doing great sleuthing out there, keep up the great work, and hopefully one day we'll solve one of these things.
It can happen. Stranger things have happened. Gentlemen, I hope you will plan on coming back very, very soon. Ryan Begara and Shane Madej, thank you both for joining us on Web Sleuths Radio, and we look forward to your seasons of Supernatural and True Crime from BuzzFeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you
Thanks,
for having
Trisha.
Us.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
And Miss Bessie, are you there? Let me get you out here.
What did you think? Yeah. Oh,
what did you think?
They were wonderful. I am a new fan.
Yeah. I'm telling you, people have got to watch these.
Yeah, I had to mute my mic because I was, you know, giggling a lot in the background. And then
I'm wonderful.
The fact that they're so opposite, you know, that they present such opposite views, yet they do it in a congenial, fun way, it's perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of a mixture of the two. I do believe in quote-unquote ghosts, but I also believe there's a scientific reason that we'll find out about one day. I don't think it's necessarily supernatural. That's what we just branded as supernatural, but I do believe it. I'm not a big believer in demons. Like I said, anybody that's ever hurt me has been a living human being, never a demon.
Right.
So I'm just kind of, if you take Sean and Ryan and kind of blend them together, it kind of comes out. Those are my theories and thoughts. Where do you stand on it, Bessie?
I'm pretty much the same way. I mean, as Ryan said, you know, being raised Catholic, I think had some influence for a while at one time. Excuse me. I was more open to such things. And then, of course, you know, like I said, living in New Orleans, I mean, we just accept them. I remember one time years ago, I wanted to buy a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted
oh,
a house
I'd love that.
Ghosts. You know, I wasn't afraid. I just, you know, hey, I think thought that'd be cool to have a house with a ghost.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But, you know, but I'm a little bit like Ryan in that way, you know, being brought up in the church and but then I'm also, you know, now that I'm older, I can relate more to Shane that there are much more scarier things in the world than ghosts. And if there are spirits among us, I don't think that there are necessarily evil spirits out there. And I have seen some things that were, you know, pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Because we have a little time. Tell us what you've seen that makes you go, oh, my God, that was a ghost.
Well, it made me wonder. I mean, just seeing things like somebody standing, you know, waking up and a figure standing at the foot of my bed, you know, which, I mean, it was not just like smoke. I mean, it was definitely an outline of a figure. And I was awake. I definitely was awake. You know, I wasn't hallucinating or half asleep. That was one thing. And I don't know, I can't think of some of the other things, but over the years, you know, I've seen some things and experienced some things where you could say, boy, that's surely is strange. And you know, but I don't dwell on it. And I also believe like Ryan said, that you know, if you do believe in evil spirits, you know, once you start to dwell on that, you do open the portal to the supernatural, and it could be dangerous if there really are, you know, evil spirits.
Right. Well, that's the only thing,
yeah.
And that's, you know, it's good advice and good things to try anything that you don't know how you might react to, whether you'll react to something good will or your imagination might get the better of you. So just best not to do that.
Because some people can get caught up in it, and you know,
exactly,
to the point where,
not
where
healthy.
It's harmful.
Right. I've had several things. The most recent one was, I'm going to say, about 10 years ago. And my son and I were sitting in our living room, and you can see the kitchen from the living room, and the stove, we can see perfectly. And the butter dish was on the stove, round. It was just, we put a butter on a coffee cup dish. And it was like kind of, there. It's four burners, and then there's a strip, just a strip of the material in the middle, porcelain in the middle.
Yeah.
And the butter dish was on that porcelain, kind of in the back. And what made my son and I turn and look is we heard a noise of that kind of scraping against the stove. And we looked and we watched it, and Bessie, right hand to God, it was like somebody was standing there and they took their hand and they just flung that butter dish right off the stove.
Wow.
And we both said at the exact same time, "Did you see that?" Because we couldn't believe it. Now,
that
my son is he's a big-time atheist, and I ask him about that all the time, and he always gives me some, "Well, I think there was some sort of, you know, weird something in physics that blah, blah, blah," and he goes on to this bizarre explanation that I don't even know that is scientific. But he won't even consider for the fact that it could be something maybe from somewhere else that we just don't understand. And you know, very well could have been scientific. Like I said, I do believe maybe in 1,000 years from now, people are going to look back at us and go, "Wow, they didn't." It was just like people that didn't know that the world was round, and they didn't understand that there were other countries and other people. It was all very mysterious to them, and they made up stories to explain it all. And I think it's the same way with ghosts and supernatural.
Yeah.
We're putting these stories to it to explain it. And I do think, not in our lifetime, but I do think we'll have an understanding of why those things happen. Okay,
yeah,
Bessie, my dear, thank you for everything. Anything going on that you want to talk about?
I just had one more ghost story I just remembered. That was a big one.
Yes, let's hear it.
This is a long time ago when, you know, I was single, and my boyfriend and I each had our own apartments. But, you know, I'd stay at his apartment often. And we started hearing in the middle of the night a noise, like an animal noise. And it woke us up one night, and I said, to me it sounded like pigs or hogs, but I asked him, I said, did you hear that? And he said, yeah, it sounded like a pig. So, I mean, I didn't tell him what I thought, you know, independently, we both thought it sounded like pigs or hogs, you know, that loud snorting, and he had terrazzo floors, and we could hear, like, you know, hoofs or claws or something scratching on the floors, like there were pigs running around in the living room.
Oh my God, that would terrify me.
It was very, very loud and vivid, and there was no way we could explain it. It was just a small one bedroom apartment. There was nobody else in there, so it happened about 3 times over a week or so. And then after that, he gave up the apartment. I mean, it scared him that well. It scared me too.
Wow.
One night we got up in the middle of the night and went to my apartment to sleep. That's how much it frightened us. And then we just stopped staying there.
God.
Yeah, and it was so vivid. And we asked the neighbor next door; she hadn't heard anything, and there just was no way to explain it. So that was another time. That was another big story.
And see, that would be absolutely terrifying. But I think there are other dimensions, other portals, and sometimes maybe they just get mushed up. And, you know, maybe there was a hog farmer in your portal. Yeah, I mean, who knows? But now, see, that would absolutely terrify me beyond belief.
It did, and, you know, especially being as young as I was at the time, it did scared him too.
Did, Did you say you heard growling or just hooves and things?
No, like snorting, like, you know.
Snorting.
Like pig, the sound that pigs and hogs make, you know, that loud kind of snorting.
Yeah. Oh, I wish you would have recorded it. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I wonder what that was.
Right. I don't know.
Very
never figured out. We talked to the landlord, talked to the neighbors, nobody else has heard anything, just us.
They must have thought you were nuts talking about pigs and hooves and everything.
Yeah. And the fact that I thought, pigs immediately, and I didn't tell him. I just said, did you hear something? And he said, did you hear that? And he said, yeah, God, it sounds like pigs. So, I mean, we both...
Oh, my gosh.
Her...
We both did it.
Yeah. We heard the same thing. So...
Oh.
So, who knows?
Well, Bessie,
who knows?
Maybe someday we'll find out why the pigs were in your apartment, or in his apartment, rather. So,
yeah.
Okay, everybody. Hey, thank you so much. This is a special edition because we're going to put it... we're recording it. We're going to put it up for your listening pleasure very soon. So, Bessie, we'll talk to you soon, and we'll see you on Web Sleuth, everybody. Take care now. Bye-bye. Bye, Bessie.
Good night.